Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cinema Joes, the podcast where three average Joes discuss the significant topics in movie culture. My name is Justin Mancini. I am one of your hosts here, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts. First, let's say hello to the podcast editor for thepopbreak.com and the co-host of the TV Break podcast, Alex Marcus. Hello, Alex.
Hey, Justin. How's it going today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I'm very excited. You know, these episodes that we do are some of my favorites, which I'll get into in a little bit. But before we do that, I want to introduce my other co-host. He is one of the co-hosts of the Pod on the Rooftops podcast with yours truly, a podcast devoted to Genesis, Noah France. Hello, Noah.
Hey, guys.
Glad that the three original amigos are all here. Very excited to talk to you both because this is our summer movie preview for the year 2021. As our listeners may recall, we did not actually do an episode for the year 2020. Can't imagine why we would have not done that, considering there was only a worldwide pandemic that severely limited us knowing when things were going to be released.
And excuses.
So, unfortunately, like I said, these episodes are some of my favorite that we do because there's just so much optimism and it's really funny, as I was telling both Noah and Alex off air, it's very funny to revisit these episodes and see what we got right, what we got wrong, and what we never even made the time for. So it's a lot of fun for us. We hope it's fun for you, our listeners, as well. But like I said, we're just going to typically on this podcast, we talk about a movie release and then a broader subject related to that movie release. But this episode, we're just going to be doing our summer movie preview, and we're going to be going month by month, starting from May and going till August. Before we get into some of these titles and start going month by month, I just wanted to ask you both, how are you feeling about the list of releases for this summer in general? And how are you feeling about seeing movies in a world where COVID is still kind of a thing, but is maybe getting a little better in some ways? Like, how are you feeling about the season itself with the movies and then the season in a COVID world?
So for me, what I would say is that there's definitely still a lack of exciting options compared to a typical summer movie season. It still feels like we're a little bit scaled back, which I'm a little bit surprised by because I was kind of expecting this summer season to be sort of like all the movies that we didn't get to see last year and then a lot of movies that were already scheduled for this year. And it feels like we're kind of just, you know, I guess in a way that is true, but it does still feel like some things are being held back in regards to the bigger like tentpole movies. Like when you think about years past, sometimes it's like almost every single weekend there's this giant event movie, and like sometimes they're terrible and you're like, why are they doing this? And sometimes they're like really cool and interesting. And then there's also that whole sea of sort of independent smaller movies. And at least right now there's just it's just a thinner group of films. Like all of that still exists, but it's just not stacked in the way that it would typically have been in like 2018 or 2019. But I think that that's okay because, you know, it is still a pandemic happening, right? Things are getting better in the United States, but they're certainly not getting better everywhere. And the international movie, gross product is important to Hollywood these days. So it makes sense that, you know, they're kind of, there's definitely things on this calendar that are exciting and there are things that are on this calendar that are big, but that did surprise me a little bit, that it's not just like every single weekend there's like another crazy movie to see, you know. And in terms of my interest in seeing them, I'm definitely planning on seeing some things in theaters this summer, but that is not something that I'm planning on doing every single week in a way that I may have would have in the past. I'm lucky to be fully vaccinated, but there are still, you know, concerns about the virus right now, at least as you know, the vaccination rate is not as high as it could be, and the spread of the disease is still kind of, you know, higher than it should be, though, of course, not as bad as it is in other places. So that's also a factor. If I end up going to the movies, it's going to be a lot of, like, you know, Saturday morning at, like, 8:30 a.m. sort of screenings for a while instead of, you know, a Saturday night. And yeah, probably I'll be watching fewer movies overall. And some of these movies that are on this list, I probably won't catch up with for a few months instead of running out to the theaters to see them right away.
Yeah, I think that's all very fair. You know, it's very uncertain. I feel like just with, I feel much more confident like that I will be able to go to the theater this year. By the time that I am fully vaccinated, as of this recording, I've had my first shot and I'm scheduled to get my second one a little bit. So it won't be until, I guess, another month where I'll be, you know, considered like, you know, fully vaccinated. But yeah, like I'm kind of with you. I feel like there are certain things that I really want to see in theaters. Other things that are coming to streaming or possibly streaming and theaters, which I may just see at home. And you know, I think that's fine. I will say, like, when I first looked at this list of movies, I was kind of thinking, like, I was like, wow, there's like a lot of good stuff coming out. And then I started going like really in depth on some of them and realized, like, oh no, there's like fewer movies than usual that I'm excited for here. Yeah, it's an interesting group of movies. I think there's a lot of there's some stuff that I think you would consider more blockbuster. There's I'd say the movies that are maybe a little more off the beaten path, I might be a little more excited for. But, you know, it'll all remain to be seen. But we'll get into, like, the film a little bit later on that I would consider as, like, my most anticipated of the summer. And I think it has potential to both be either very good or a colossal failure. But we will that will all remain to be seen. But you, Noah, how are you feeling about the summer movie season in general, especially with you being in, you know, not in the United States, being in Germany?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be possible for me to see some stuff in theaters this summer. But I'm still very much out of whack in terms of just not being just mentally not having an awareness of an interest in the actual up-to-date release schedule. So I can't say that any of the I think that's a carryover effect from last year where I just had to adjust myself to, well, I have no idea when I'm going to be able to see anything. So I'm just going to have to wait and see, or it might be available to stream, but only for like $30, which is why it took ages for me to finally be able to see Emma until that was available at a reasonable price, for example. Yeah. So, I am in no way assuming that any, beyond the Netflix releases, because Netflix is actually pretty good at having their stuff be accessible globally. So the Netflix movies aside, I don't know how quickly I'm going to be able to see any of the stuff that's set to come out over the next few months.
I know for you, Noah, like in the last year, I think you're not alone in that. Movies have become a smaller part of your life overall. Like, you kind of have fallen out of the habit of, you know, seeing a new movie on a regular basis and having that be a part of your lifestyle. And I think that you're not alone in that at all. And I think that there's a lot of concern that, you know, now that people have been trained out of that in a way, because it just wasn't an option for most people and the culture kind of moved on past movies in this past year. There's a big concern that people won't come back. And I think that it'll be interesting. You know, you host a movie podcast and even you feel kind of like maybe you're not going to be as engaged on this stuff moving forward, at least in the near term. So I think that's an interesting thing to track.
I don't think about myself. I think I'm undergoing a delayed reaction to the whole past year plus. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not worried about, like, I still love movies and I still love talking about movies and I still love watching movies. But the fact that it's not been possible for me to have an awareness of, oh, what's coming out recently and what am I going to be able to watch? That's just kind of keeping up to date with current movies, with current releases, that's been pushed back. But my interest in movies in general and in watching movies, I would say I don't think that's been changed at all. it's just it's my ability to mentally to be able to think about what's about to come out, like what's new. So yeah, we'll see how the summer goes. I mean, I'm going to be fully vaccinated by the end of this month, so
good.
Yeah, so I definitely anticipate seeing some stuff in theaters. I'm just glancing through this list that Justin prepared for us. I don't know what's going to be available here. I really don't know. Mm. I'm going to wait until I'm vaccinated, and then I'm going to start worrying about what the movie schedules are. So, yeah. Like, the stuff that we have coming up in May, that's not going to be, like, I don't know what I'll be able to see in May, if anything. So, we'll see.
Okay.
Other than Netflix releases.
Yeah.
Which there are a few.
Yeah. So, let's start with Noah said in our episode in 2019 when we were last at a summer movie, the lusty month of May.
May.
So what's maybe we'll start with you, Alex. Is there anything that you find intriguing in this month?
There's a lot of that could be interesting in May. which is, you know, not a lot of like, oh man, I can't wait to see that. But there's, you know, I'm looking over our list and we have a movie like Monster, which is directed by Anthony Mandler and has just a really stacked cast, like Kelvin Harris Jr. and Jennifer Ely and, you know, Jennifer Hudson, John David Washington, Jeffrey Wright, really cool cast of people. Nas is in it, which is interesting. The movie was originally debuted at Sundance in 2018 and has kind of been on a shelf for 2 years, and that certainly makes me worried, because in a year like we just had, Netflix was kind of like, we'll put a movie out every single week, and this one didn't make the cut, so, you know, kind of worrisome, I think.
That makes it a little bit more confusing. We're getting a lot of, like, we're getting a lot of stuff delayed, you know?
Yeah, like, this movie was co-written, I should say, by Rada Blank, who wrote, starred, and directed in Netflix's hit film 40-Year-Old Version last year, which is a movie that I absolutely loved. So that also is kind of a contributing factor to my interest in it. But the premise is a little bit, you know, it's kind of like, basically, Kelvin Harrison Jr. gets accused of committing murder, and he starts out as this like kind of like you know, high school kid who's a straight A student, and then that happens, and I'm just kind of curious like how many more times Kelvin Harrison Jr. is going to play that role.
Yeah, I had a similar thought.
But you know, it's on Netflix. I think I'm definitely going to watch it, and I'll be interested to see if it kind of, you know, is worth the watch. Other movies here today. Director Billy Crystal, starring Billy Crystal and Tiffany Haddish as a comedy duo, basically, is certainly an interesting thing on this schedule that, you know, I'm not going to probably rush out to see that in theaters, but I'm definitely writing it down and I will be watching it at some point because that's an energy that I need to observe, because what an interesting clashing of worlds. That sounds like and then of course we finally get Joe Wright's The Woman in the Window, which is going to be coming out on Netflix. That movie I feel like we've been hearing about for 2 years.
I remember seeing a trailer for that at some point, I think when I was in theaters for something.
Yeah, it was originally supposed to come out a couple years ago. I believe, and it was one of the last Fox movies that was kind of made before the Netflix handoff. Yeah.
Ooh, okay, that one I think I'm definitely gonna make the time to see, because the trailer did grab me.
Yeah, it has not gotten a lot of like good press around it. It seems like it might be kind of a disaster, but Joe Wright movies are so interesting visually, and this cast is so stacked, like Amy Adams at the center of the frame, and also, you know, we got Gary Oldman and Anthony Mackie. Upcoming movie
I'm interested in, and Alex is like, temper your enthusiasm, Laura.
But, you know, I think it's important to temper your enthusiasm, but yeah,
it's, don't kill my vibe.
It's interesting, at the very least. So yeah, I think that's kind of it for May for me, you know. Also, Those Who Wish Me Dead, that's a movie starring Angelina Jolie, about like her and like a little kid kind of, you know, fighting a corrupt system within side a fire, like a wildfire, basically.
Yeah.
And I would be all about that if it wasn't written and directed by Taylor Sheridan. And so, you know, it is. So we'll have to see if I'm all about that, because, you know, he's kind of not my, he is consistently not my jam. So, you know, but at least, but yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know.
Yeah.
What kind of jam is he, Alex? Apricot?
No, I think he's kind of more like the jam that, you know, a 45-year-old man who watches a lot of the History Channel, but not for history documentaries, you know, that kind of guy. I think it's like it's his.
Oh, he was the guy who wrote the Sicario films.
Yeah, yeah. He wrote Sicario. He wrote Wind River. He's created Yellowstone on Paramount Network, which is kind of like the most successful show on television somehow. Has spawned 4 different spinoffs. Like, Paramount Network has basically just given Taylor Sheridan like a whole wing of that streaming service just for his projects.
I'm reading the premise. It's about people setting fire to a national forest. I don't think I could handle that under any circumstances at this point.
Well, it's about, like, Angelina Jolie is, like, a former, wildfire firefighter who, like, retires because she's the only person in her crew that survives a big wildfire, and then, like, a kid who sees something who they shouldn't see ends up, it, like, being in Jolie's protection, and, you know, the bad guys try to set a fire to...
No, well, yeah, no, it's that,
to form a distraction.
It's that, I mean, the continuing crisis of declining biodiversity and the decline in wildlife on the world is something that, like, I have to fight myself every day to not fall into despair over that. So I don't think I could willingly watch a movie that is partly about people like, hey, here's a big forest, let's burn it. Like,
that will piss me off,
and I will just feel nothing but anger and hatred for several hours.
I think that's the reaction that you're supposed to have from this film. Like those are the bad guys, and they're doing like a comically bad thing.
You know, I think that movie's definitely gonna get a pass for me.
Yeah, it sounds like it might be a trigger for Noah.
To a certain degree. I mean, as much as I can use that word, yes, I don't need to make myself angrier than I generally am at the human race.
Well, I mean, I feel like it'd be hard to watch any movie, honestly, if that were the case.
Yeah.
But I hear you, Noah. I hear what you're saying. Is there anything for you that intrigued you this month, Noah?
Just because of the fact that it's directed by David Oyelowo, I'm not sure how it's supposed to be released, but The Waterman, because David Oyelowo is a cool guy. So if he's doing a project, then just that alone would make me interested in, like, you know, how it turned out. I can't get much from Wikipedia on what the film's about, though. Is it a fantasy movie?
It seems like at the very least it's skirting that line.
It's definitely like a kid's movie, though, with like a crazy stacked adult cast, which is interesting.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I could see myself watching that just to, you know, give David some clicks.
Yeah. So that's maybe of the movies that are this year, like that's, or sorry, this month, that's maybe the one that I'm most intrigued about. I heard the premise. I'm like, okay, that sounds like that could be like really nuts, or also just like really, like a really charming family adventure kind of movie. And we don't get a lot of those. And I kind of like the vibe I was getting from the trailer. The premise, for those who don't know, that I could find, is hoping to save his sick mother, a boy ventures into the remote Wild Horse Forest to search for a mythical figure who possesses the secret to immortality. So, I think you kind of have to get on board with this, like, sort of fantasy adventure vibe that it's going for. As Alex mentioned, there's a really good cast, including Oyelowo himself and also Rosario Dawson, who I believe plays the mother. It's also, from what I could tell, based on it hasn't gotten, like... sort of a critical consensus yet, but there's been, I would say, around 20 or so reviews, and it's been very positive for the most part. Although, just from what I was seeing, I would say those are maybe a little more qualified positive reviews. So, but at the same time, like, I kind of just interested in a you know, in a sort of like family adventure movie, with and also like the main character carries a samurai sword, so like that's pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know. There's just it intrigues me. I'm interested to see Oyelowo as a director. I feel like there have been quite a few actors that I've really admired for a long time making the directorial debuts to, you know, like varying degrees of success. But I'm kind of interested to see what he's going to do with this movie. I did also want to just jump on what Alex was saying about Monster. The reason I just wanted to add that. So this is actually based on a novel by Walter Dean Myers. It's a young adult novel from, I believe, the late 90s. And I actually read this as part of a course in college and was a really big fan of it. And one of the things that's interesting about the book is that part of it is in screenplay format, because he's the, at least in the book, the character is an aspiring filmmaker. So he actually will portray the events of his trial and some portions of the crime that he was allegedly a part of, in like a screenplay format. I'm curious to see how that was going to, how that would work on film. I don't know if, like, I will say that I like the casting. I think the casting is very good with Kelvin Harrison Jr. But yeah, and as opposed to The Waterman, what few reviews there are have been a little bit rough. And it did, like you mentioned, Alex, it did sit on a shelf for a little bit. Yeah, this is a really good book. I don't know how well it's going to translate to the screen. There's a lot of sections where I almost feel like having the image in your imagination is going to be more powerful than actually seeing it on screen. But, you know, I will probably make time to see this at some point. And just one more movie I wanted to bring up from this month, which I thought might possibly intrigue Noah, although I don't know if the subject matter is something he would be interested in. It's a movie called Spiral from the Book of Saw, which is the reason I'm bringing it up is because it's directed by Darren Lynn Bousman, who Noah will probably know as the director of Repo: The Genetic Opera, which I at least wanted to bring up. Because
that's a deep track there.
And this movie is also notable because he doesn't have a screenplay credit, but this movie was written by Chris Rock. It was kind of like pitched by him.
Yes.
He basically, like, he entered into a room with people and they were like, what project do you want to work on? And he's like, the thing that I really want to do is make a Saw movie. And so then, and now he did. So there's a little bit of interest in like why Chris Rock wanted to make a Saw movie and what his version of a Saw movie would be. And you know, it stars Chris Rock and Samuel Jackson, among other people. So that certainly is interesting. But yeah, I don't know. I never really enjoyed this franchise before, and I don't think I'm starting it.
I've never seen anything of the franchise, so
I guess like
I saw Saw
I guess
6
me completely
in theaters.
Oh, really?
And only that, and that was a mistake. The labyrinth, the labyrinthine sort of like
all the
soap
backstory,
opera.
Alex.
Well, it just like the crazy soap opera like plotting is just really insane. I was not prepared for that. Like it's
like MCU. You have to have the whole Saw EU experience.
Well, it just like I don't know if you realize this, Noah, but like there's like the franchise like timeline is totally bananas, because like there's like one movie comes out and then the next movie like the guy dies and then like the next movie after that takes place between the two movies, and then there's one that like happens like afterwards but with flashbacks from before, and it just like it's like very confusing, and it like all kind of like moves like it all catches up to what happened in the second one, even though like you're in like 5, 6 whatever. So there's like it's very complicated and like needlessly so.
It sounds just complicated and it sounds like I would never ever care.
And also it's just like the majority of it is just torture porn, so like it also like doesn't matter, so it's like needlessly complicated and also doesn't matter at all. And like the one that I saw was like very kind of focused on a Wahlberg, and that was not really useful for me, so
Yeah, I'm hoping, I mean, you know, wait, I guess I'm curious if this film is going to veer away from the torture porn or if it's going to like lean into that insert. But like, it does seem to be going for a police procedural aspect to it, which I guess I, you know, could potentially, if that's the direction I want to go, I feel like maybe the first movie was maybe more in line with that. You know,
there is,
I think,
always a cop subplot to every one of the Saw movies, though. Yeah. So I am a little bit concerned that this is sort of like a bait and switch where they're just kind of like foregrounding that aspect of the movie, and it's still going to feel a lot like a regular Saw movie when you actually sit down to watch it.
Yeah, Chris Rock's involvement is maybe if it did not have him, if it was just like some other, you know, spin-off of that series, I probably would not be remotely interested. But yeah, I am curious to see if he does anything with it. But yeah, we will see.
Is there anything else, Justin, in May that is like catching your interest?
Yes. And I think maybe more than just my interest. But yes, I know I promised one more. But I think we need to bring up, very briefly mention, A Quiet Place Part 2 is one of them, which, you know, the sequel to the very successful first film. It is directed and written by John Krasinski and was supposed to come out last summer. I'm curious about that one, especially with introducing new characters. I believe Cillian Murphy being a new character here. But the other one that I wanted to bring up, which is probably, you know, one of the probably the biggest release of this month, is Cruella, the new Disney film, directed by Craig Gillespie, who people will know as the director of I, Tonya that we reviewed on this podcast. And starring Emma Stone as the younger version of Cruella de Vil before she is Cruella, or at least I guess part of this film is about her transformation. She plays Estella de Vil. So yeah, what do we think about this one, guys?
Well, I'm very excited that Craig Gillespie's directing it, because I thought, you know, I, Tonya was not my favorite film, but you can't deny the energy that movie had, and the kind of dynamic quality to it. And also he directed Lars and the Real Girl, which is just a very kind of special movie that shouldn't work as well as it does, I'll say. And it's co-written by Tony McNamara, who of course wrote The Favorite, which is a movie that I absolutely love. And he helped create the series, The Great, which was on Hulu last year, starring Elle Fanning and Nicholas Hoult. And Ed is, you know, that show I didn't quite like as much as everyone else did, but I did enjoy it. I'm probably not going to watch the second season, but I did really like the first season enough to just like kind of to further make me interested in what a Cruella film from that kind of vibe would be. And I love Emma Stone. I love Emma Stone getting to play a big character. That's very exciting. You know, Emma Thompson is always fun to see. Paul Walter Hauser is in this movie, and he's just always just perfect and just like is a guaranteed fun performance, no matter whether it's in some terrible Clint Eastwood movie or a small role in an amazing film from last year, Defy Bloods. So yeah, I'm all in on this. It looks really fun. It's going to be on Disney Plus, so I'm not going to have to pay for it, so even better for me. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I always like when you take an established figure, like a character from a story that everyone knows, and like decide like, okay, like let's take a look at this through a different prism and a different perspective. I think that's a fun form of adaptation, certainly much more so than like the Lion King adaptation where it's just like, hey, remember that movie that you watched? It's going to be exactly the same, look worse, and somehow be a half hour longer. So yeah, I'm more Cruella's, less Lion King's in the future, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Really quick, isn't this going to be on Premier Access on Disney Plus?
Oh yeah, no, it says Premier Access. All right, yeah, I'm wrong. I know Luca is not Premier Access.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. I'm intrigued by this. It's been a long time since I've seen any of the 101 Dalmatians movies. Like, I mostly remember watching the animated one when I was very, very young, and just being terrified by Cruella de Vil. I guess the one thing I'm intrigued here to see is if this is going to be at all a sympathetic portrait, because I'm like, you know, I wouldn't mind watching a movie about Cruella where it's just, she's just kind of terrible. and you just kind of track her character, and Emma Stone gets to be really delicious. Like, that's just that just seems like that's a movie I would watch. Like, I don't, you know, at the same time, I'm aware it's still a Disney movie. I don't know if that's what we're going to get, but I think there's definitely potential here. And I love the casting. I love that she's working from a script that was co-written by Tony McNamara after working on The Favorite. So yeah, I think there's definitely potential here. But I don't know, Noah, how do you feel about this movie?
Guy, we know my thoughts on these franchise guys. you'll tell me all about it, I'm sure.
Yeah, Noah is a fundamentalist. If it ever appeared hand-drawn at any point, it is not allowed to exist in live action.
No, not quite. The current Disney modus operandi is what I just find very frustrating. So
can I ask you, Noah, like not to, you know, needle you necessarily, but like, I know, like, weren't you a fan of Maleficent? Like, you saw that, right?
I saw, like, the two Maleficent movies, and I actually thought they were quite interesting.
So what is it about this that you think is different from,
well, okay,
like, taking a chance? Like, because it's kind of, you're taking the villain and making them, like, the focus of the movie. It's not like a,
well,
if, you know,
well, I'll wait like and a see straight remake. I'll wait and see what you guys tell me. If you guys tell me it's more Maleficent than it is, you know, Lion King and Beauty and the Beast, then maybe I'll give it a look.
Okay. All right, well, we should move on.
Yeah, before we move off of May, though, there was one movie that hadn't come up that I think we should at least mention, which is Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, which is going to be coming out on Netflix on the 21st of the month. That's a movie starring Dave Bautista and Theo Rossi and Matthias Schoenrock. And Tig Notaro, interestingly, a number of other people, Garrett Dillahunt. I'm very curious if you guys are at all interested in this. I know Zack Snyder is obviously a controversial figure in the film world, but pretty much everyone agrees that his Day of the Dead movie, or Dawn of the Dead movie, which was like kind of his big break, is his best film and is like a very interesting film and actually has a lot of merit to it. So a lot of people are excited that he's returning to this sort of zombie milieu. I infamously do not care about zombie movies, and it's just like not my thing. So I obviously don't have a lot of interest in it. But I'm curious if you guys do.
Not really. I don't care about Zack Snyder.
I haven't seen his remake of Dawn of the Dead. I have heard good things, and if there's anything that intrigues me, it's just seeing the amount of memes of Tig Notaro being a badass, and I'm like all for that. So if that's what the movie is going to give us, then color me intrigued.
Yeah, I'm very happy for her. I'm very excited for the gifts, and you know, maybe there'll be something worth seeing. But you know, as I said, I don't really like these movies, so I even if. You know, it would be a tall order to get me to sit down and watch it in the first place. But
yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to June. We had a lot more to say about May than I expected. But I did want to maybe start. We can go on to other things we're interested in this month. But one of the big releases, I think, from this month that we want to talk about is In the Heights, which is from director John M. Chu, who, of course, did Crazy Rich Asians in 2018. And is based on the Lin-Manuel Miranda musical. So this was actually supposed to come out last summer, and for obvious reasons got pushed back. How are you guys feeling about this one? This, I should mention, is going to be in theaters and on HBO Max for a limited time, and there'll be other movies coming up where there'll be a similar circumstance. But how do you guys have any familiarity with the musical this is based on, and just how are you feeling about this movie in general?
I don't know the musical, but I definitely want to see this adaptation. I don't know if I'll be able to see it in theaters or not. So I hope that I can see it in theaters.
Yeah, I think this might be the first film that I see in theaters since everything happened last year. That's kind of what my plan is. I'm very excited for it. So I moved to New York in 2008 for college, and one of my roommates was a very big theater fan, and he was actually from North Carolina, so coming to live in New York City was like a big getting to see theater, live theater, was a big draw for him in terms of like coming to the school in the first place. And one of the very first things, I think maybe the first thing that he saw when he came here was In the Heights. And this was before anyone, any normies knew who Lin-Manuel Miranda even was. And I remember him seeing it, like being excited to check it out, and then coming back and talking about how much he really liked it. And from that point, I was always like, man, like I'm not a person who sees live theater for a variety of reasons, but if they ever make a movie out of that, I'll be very excited to see it because it sounds really cool. And, you know, now cut to like 4 decades later is how it feels, at least. getting to actually see it in a theater is very exciting. And I love the cast. Like Corey Hawkins is really cool. Anthony Ramos just has my heart forever. And Jimmy Smits, love a chance to see Jimmy Smits, Stephanie Beatrice, like such a stacked cast. And it just looks so fun. It looks so exciting. It looks so just like full of just like color and feeling and summer. It just looks like summer on a screen. And it just, I'm really excited for it.
Summer on a screen. Wow.
Yeah, there's like going to be a whole musical number in a pool.
That is a great tagline. Summer on a screen.
Yeah, it's I can't
someone
wait. It's
called Lin-Manuel Miranda. Get that on the poster.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be seeing this. Hopefully in a theater. That would be how I'd prefer it. I will say, I think of the three of us, I believe I'm the only one who has seen this on stage.
Yes.
Not to brag or anything,
rub it in.
I saw a production, actually, believe it or not, I saw it when I was still living in Sacramento. And it was basically like, it was a version that they had kind of like brought on the road. They played at several other venues throughout the United States. But I really loved it. I was, I didn't know any of the songs going into it. Of course, I knew Hamilton beforehand. One of the things that really, drew me to it was I think a lot of the things that you're talking about that the trailer I think is spotlighting, the sense of joy that's definitely in the musical, but it's also like deals with some tough subject matter. I mean, you've got characters making like very pivotal life decisions that affect not only like either the the potential for their own futures the effect that their decisions might have on the communities that they come from. You've got other characters dealing with impoverishment. Like it deals with some really tough stuff. And I guess I'm really curious, of course the way that they're marketing it, I think is more that sense of joy and exuberance and energy. And that's definitely a component of the musical. I'm curious to see if the musical is able to balance that with these, with the real life issues that are such a core of the story and of the music. I certainly hope that's the case. You know, I certainly think they're marketing it in a way that makes it seem fun and more power to them for that. But yeah, I guess I'm just curious to see if it's able to take the totality of what makes that show so great and translate it to the screen.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. I have faith that John M. Chu and company can pull it off because he's a really fun director, and I'm really excited that he's getting a chance to do this after, Crazy Rich Asians felt a lot like a musical without songs in a number of ways when you watched it. So I think that he's just a great fit for this, and I can't wait to see what it looks like.
Yeah. I wanted, so for you, Noah, anything else that strikes your fancy in the month of June?
Nothing that strikes my fancy, but two stuff that I'm kind of baffled by in this list.
Oh, okay.
First off, I find it astonishing that I looked this up. Apparently, the Spirit franchise has continued on. Which I was completely. I think, see, so. Going way, way back to the early, early DreamWorks did a couple of films in traditional hand-drawn animation. mixed with some CGI, but mostly hand-drawn. And in general, I consider them to be extremely underrated, and I think it's a damn shame that DreamWorks just wholly abandoned that in favor of just doing CGI. And one of them was Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron, which I always really liked and has always had like a... I've retained a big nostalgic attraction to. Apparently the franchise has been ongoing since then, and there's now a CGI movie coming out. I don't think I could handle seeing it, because the idea of that film being in CGI just makes me want to vomit, but I was not expecting to see that.
Yeah, it apparently is based on it's based on a Netflix animated television series called Spirit Riding Free, which is the Spirit franchise.
Yes. Yeah, which is inspired by the movie that came out 20 fucking years ago. I saw it in theaters when I was a kid. Oh, wow. that sent me on a nostalgia trip just seeing that. and also, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't The Hitman's Bodyguard like a big flop?
No, it was a huge success.
I think financially, yeah, it was a success.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
critics didn't like it very much, but it was one of those movies that like came out in August and just owned the box office for a month.
Okay.
That's why we're getting Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
I also, just two things on this list that I never expected to see on an upcoming release list ever. So, color me mildly shocked.
Yeah, that one's, you know, Ryan Reynolds and Samuel Jackson are coming back. Selma Hayek is, I'm assuming, the titular wife. Then there's Frank Grillo, Richard E. Grant, Antonio Banderas, and Morgan Freeman. So it's a pretty insane cast. I can't lie. I mean, that first movie looked truly like just like lowest common denominator, like worst, like really lazy filmmaking. But the cast of this sequel is really insane. I might actually watch this. I don't know.
We'll see. I'm not planning on seeing either of those movies, but they definitely stood out to me.
Yeah, I feel like this month has some this was a month where there's some things that I feel like would be really interesting to see in theaters that I think are like your standard sort of theater fare, and there's other things that I'm like, wait, that's a movie? There's at least three movies here that I'm intrigued by, but like not quite sure what to expect from.
A lot of the stuff in this list in general, like I've been Googling a lot of the films outside of the biggest stuff that I was already aware of. And mostly my reaction is just, well, okay. But
I think that's why it's okay that we spend so much time talking about the May releases, because the June releases are sort of like not a lot there, honestly. Like it's a surprise, because I feel like you kind of ramp up June,
beyond In the Heights, nothing is jumping out at me like, oh no, this is in your wheelhouse, Noah, you've got to see this. Like I'm just I guess that exists.
There's the next Conjuring film, and certainly people who like The Conjuring like those movies and are probably going to be very excited for this one. I'm not one of those people. I've never seen them. It's not like an insult. I'm sure they're great. They're just not my kind of movie. You know, I'm not a huge horror guy. But so that's something that I'm sure some people are excited about. There's Luca coming from Pixar, which I'm really looking forward to. That looks great. Jacob Tremblay, Jack Dylan, Larry Fraser. Is that the one with
Lin-Manuel Miranda voicing a monkey?
No.
I'm thinking of something else. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, that is not what that movie is. This is basically like, I mean, it visually recalls Call Me By Your Name, but I don't think it's going to have a similar plot. I know people were very upset when those comparisons were made online, but like whatever, people need to calm down. And then, you know, there's also Fast 9, which has been highly anticipated for over a year now.
The 9, as I've been calling it.
Yes. they're finally going to space, so get excited for that. I'm not someone who's on that train, so, you know, but who knows, maybe this will be the thing that gets me to watch all those movies. I don't know. But yeah, there's not really a lot else there. Zola, which comes out June 30th, is a movie that I've been looking forward to for a very long time. It basically, like, it's a movie based off of a Twitter thread, which sounds awful, but it really isn't.
I read that and said an infamous Twitter thread where someone meets a sex worker. I'm like, How do you meet someone on a Twitter thread?
It was Noah. It was a whole thing a number of years ago. If you weren't there for it, it would be hard to explain. But it had. It was very exciting in the moment.
Okay, then don't bother explaining it to me.
The screenplay is written by Jeremy O'Harris, who wrote a slave play, which was a huge play a number of years ago. He's like a very hot talent right now. It's starring Taylor Page, who got excellent reviews out of Sundance last year when the movie debuted. Riley Keough, who, of course, I think everyone on this podcast is a big fan of. Oh, yeah. And Nicholas Braun from Succession. So that's exciting. Also, Coleman Domingo is supposed to be really good in it. So,
yeah,
really, really looking forward to that movie at the end of the month.
Yeah, I would have been disappointed if you didn't bring up that movie, Alex. I believe the film is directed and I think co-written by Janixa Bravo, who has mostly worked in TV, but she's worked on some like really high profile television series like Them and Atlanta. I don't know. I was getting a little bit of a Hustlers vibe from the trailer. I love the cast. I love what the cast is doing. Like, Coleman Domingo just looks utterly terrifying, which is not a look I'm used to seeing from him, and I'm intrigued. This will be a chance. I haven't seen, like, Taylor Page, I know, had a small part in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I remember her there, but this, I think, will be a real chance to sort of get to know her as an actress. It really looks like a tour de force kind of performance.
It definitely strikes me as the kind of film that could end up being pretty great. Like, if all the elements click right.
Yeah, it debuted at Sundance last year, like you said, and it was just universally praised. So I think that there's not even a question that it's going to be good. It's just a matter of, will it live up to the hype, you know?
So I will bring up one more movie for myself, which is just, I just hear, I'm like, wait, what is this exactly? And it kind of makes me curious to see what the heck this thing even is. That's a movie coming out called False Positive, which is going to be on Hulu. It's directed by John Lee, who is, as far as I could find, the only other feature film he's directed is Pee-wee's Big Holiday. And apart from that, has done like a lot of stuff in television comedy. He's done some Adult Swim stuff. And this movie is stars and is co-written by Ilana Glazer, who people will know from Broad City. And the premise of it, from what I could find, it's as if getting pregnant weren't complicated enough, Lucy sets out to uncover the unsettling truth about her fertility doctor. Another thing I find said False Positive is said to be a contemporary take on Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, I read that and I immediately thought, what?
So, yeah, why? The fertility doctor here is played by Pierce Brosnan. I don't know if this is going to be more of a horror thriller kind of thing, more of a comedy, maybe elements of both.
It's categorized on IMDb as a horror film, so I think that's the vibe that they're going for.
That's what I assume, but yeah, the cast is great. You've got not only Glazer and Brosnan, but you've also got Justin Theroux, Gretchen Mol, Josh Hamilton, like just some really, I think, underrated actors. And I'm just intrigued to see what the heck this thing is, what it looks like. The fact that it's available on Hulu is going to be really convenient. Could be terrible for all I know, but I just was like, I had no idea until I looked into all the films that were coming out. I was like, would have had no idea something like this would have been on the horizon. So
yeah, it's an A24 horror movie. Those movies rarely miss. So I think that you should be excited about it. Yeah, it sounds like a cool idea. It seems like they're kind of like blending this whole kind of phenomena of fertility doctors who inseminate their patients with their own semen, which is an unfortunate thing that has happened many, many times in the last like 15 years to much scandal. And so I think it's kind of like mixing that with the idea of like, well, but what if also it was the devil or, you know, and with the Lana Glazer at the center of it. So that sounds really fun.
Yeah.
The only thing I thought seeing this is, you know, I really should see Rosemary's Baby at some point.
It's a classic. I thought, Justin, the weird movie you were going to say was Samaritan, which is a movie starring Sylvester Stallone and Martin Starr, who are, you know, the indelible on-screen duo that they are.
And that movie we never knew we needed.
Yeah, that, and it's an and it's apparently a superhero thriller. So by the director Julius Avery, who you know, he's made some stuff. Mostly, most notable Overlord, which is a movie that some people really liked. I didn't watch it because it just seemed like what if Cloverfield but World War II, and I was like, that's a question I don't need answered.
Having seen it, I would say that's not what it is. It's more of like, honestly, it's more in the mode of like B war movies with some horror elements, and it's got Jovan Adepo, who is great in the lead role.
Okay.
So. Yeah. So no.
Maybe this has a chance.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Yeah, I again, another one of those movies, you hear the premise, you hear the stars, and you're like, wait, what? So June has potential to be pretty wacky, I think.
Honestly, I feel like I could say the same thing for July.
Yeah.
This list.
Is there anything in July, like anything particular in July that you find especially wacky?
I just find the idea that someone, that David Lowry is apparently making an adaptation of The Green Knight. Specifically based in Sir Gawain and The Green Knight. There's definitely a lot of stuff in Arthurian legend that has not been, that is definitely rich material for the film, but has not yet been well adapted. We've had Arthurian stuff like adapted to film before, but I don't think we've had anything that's come out that people have been like, oh, this is a really, really great film adaptation of Arthurian legend. So
have you seen a trailer for this, Noah?
Not yet.
It looks so cool. It's been like, not to sound very basic, but it just does. It's starring Dev Patel, who is a personal favorite of mine, and he looks amazing in this movie, and I'm very excited for this. This was kind of like one of the big releases last year that people kept scanning, because it was like, it was supposed to come out in the spring, and then obviously the spring didn't happen and got pushed off the schedule, and people kept being like, is it going to come out now? Is it going to come out now? Are they going to do direct to video? Or are they going to do, like, what are they going to do? And then they ended up just pushing it to next year, so that way they could actually have a proper release. And then they ended up giving it a summer, like a July spot, instead of the, I think it was supposed to come out in April or May last year. So I think, you know, I think that shows us that they're very confident in this. And it looks great. I'm a huge fan of David Lowery's work. And I'm a huge fan of Dev Patel, and not a huge fan of Joel Edgerton, but sometimes he's in things that are good. You know, Sean Harris is a great character actor who I always like to see pop up. So yeah, I'm very excited for this movie.
Yeah, this is my most anticipated movie of the summer. I have seen that trailer. It does look like it looks amazing, but it also like, it's almost like recasting Arthurian legend as more of like a horror or like psychological thriller, which I'm like, you don't see that too often, if at all.
By there's a lot of rich material in Arthurian legend. There's plenty of stuff you can work with.
And the source material here is probably one of the better, like, aside from maybe the Canterbury Tales, this is one of the preeminent works of Middle English, as former English major talking here. It's a weird story. It concerns Sir Gawain, who was one of the younger Knights of the Round Table, but also one of the closer allies of Arthur. He was his nephew, if I'm recalling correctly. And the story is about, if you guys don't know, is about a this very like this gigantic, like almost giant, who is completely green, called the Green Knight, who challenges any of the Knights of the Round Table to deliver a blow to his to his neck, and promises to that he will deliver a blow of equal value like a year and a half later. So the idea is that knights think, oh, we can just behead this guy and it'll be a sign of our strength and mettle. But few people, like, no one really takes him up on the offer except Gawain, who is looking to prove himself, and he manages to behead the Green Knight totally. And the Green Knight is completely unperturbed by this, picks up his own head and says, okay, in a year and a half, I'm going to return the favor. And from there, it's this quest and sort of this test of like honesty and of honor And it has a very strange ending, which I won't reveal, but one of the things I am interested in with this movie is how is all that going to be adapted to film? Because it is definitely trafficking in some older notions of chivalry and honor. And what does that look like in a modern context? And what does that look like on film? I'm really interested to see how this is going to work. I think the fact that there have been some positive, some positive buzz about it does make me more intrigued. I agree with you, Alex. I'm a big fan of Lowry. This looks more in the vein of something like A Ghost Story than it does The Old Man and the Gun, which I'm all for.
I mean, I love that he has the range to make both of those films, honestly, you know?
Yeah, sure. And just a really intriguing cast with Patel, as you mentioned, Alex. I love just the idea of Sean Harris and Kate Dickey as Arthur and Guinevere, respectively. Like, that alone should tell you this is not going to be, your typical sort of Arthurian adaptation. It looks wild. It looks really kind of eerie, and I don't know, there's just something about it that really draws me to it. So yeah, interested to see how this what this looks like and what this looks like what this story looks like in a modern setting, or a modern context, I should say.
I absolutely can't wait. I feel like that's going to be like the Green Knight and In the Heights are the two movies of the summer. And certainly In the Heights is kind of like broad appeal. Green Knights is like film Twitter on like on acid. I'm very excited for it to come out.
Yeah. Well, we should also mention the other big release from July, which is Black Widow, finally.
I thought you were going to say Hotel Transylvania Transformania. It's the other July release.
I thought Alex was going to go off on Space Jam, because I know that's what he's looking forward to.
I mean, I'm not like excited for that movie to come out, but I will be
watching the Clockwork Orange Extended Universe.
I will be watching it on HBO Max, I'm not going to lie. For one thing, Terrence Nance is one of the screenwriters. He was supposed to direct the film and walked away from it. And I'm very curious. And he had this incredible sort of like avant-garde TV show on HBO a number of years ago called Random Acts of Flyness, which was just like unlike anything I've ever seen. And just it was very bizarre that he was attached to this project in any way. And I'm not at all surprised to see that he left. But I want to see if I could spot like where he like if any of his touches remain on this project. And also, like, who doesn't want to see Don Cheadle in a movie, right? Sinequa Martin Green is an actress that I really like in Star Trek Discovery, and she gets to play, I think, like LeBron James's wife in this movie. So come on. You're not gonna watch it?
No.
I don't expect it to be good.
I'll probably wait to see the reviews.
Yeah, I don't expect it to be good, but I expect to enjoy it. I'll probably like enjoy listening to, Blank Check is gonna do an episode about it. I'm sure the Flophouse will do an episode about it. There'll be enough content
of it.
Yeah.
To justify watching it. But yeah, if I had to pay for it, I might not, but it's coming to me free, so why not? Something that's not coming to me free is Black Widow, which I will have to pay for, whether I watch it on streaming or in the theaters. But I am looking forward to that, too. I feel like the enthusiasm for that movie is not really there, so I'm going to be very curious to see how it ends up performing. But, Florence Pugh as the new generation of, superheroes for Marvel is something that I really want to see, and I like Scarlett Johansson. I like her in this character. Obviously, the fact that this is sort of a prequel where we already know the fate of her character sort of takes some of the enthusiasm out of it. But
yeah,
I'm really excited
like
to see Florence Pugh get to like have the chance to pick up the mantle of Black Widow by the end of the film.
I feel like that is going to kill some enthusiasm for the film. This should have come out before the Avengers movies.
But it's being sold mostly as a prequel centered around the Scarlett Johansson character. But what it really is in terms of the Marvel project is an introduction for Florence Pugh, who is the new Black Widow and who will be appearing in many projects in the future. So that's sort of like the point of this film, and that's why it's coming out when it is. And I'm in support of that. Also, like, Rachel Weisz in a, mm-hmm. in a superhero movie, sign me up, right? Like, come on, how are you not excited for that?
Yeah, no, it's funny because this is the movie I feel like I've associated most with going back to theaters for some reason. I think because it got pushed back so many times where we just assumed like, oh, at this point, COVID will be under control. Okay, well, maybe at this point, COVID will be under control. So I feel like I don't know if me seeing this is going to like make me feel like things are somehow different. Probably not.
If seeing it will convince you that you've actually seen it.
But maybe it's just like
I'll believe it's in theaters when it's in theaters.
And maybe it's the fact that it's a Marvel movie and I'm so used to seeing those like in the theater and it's like always like a big deal. You're always watching it with a huge crowd. Like it's just I associate so much of this kind of movie with the theatrical experience, which I, you know, miss so deeply. And yeah, like I love the idea of Florence Pugh being, you know, the sort of the torch being passed. From what I remember of the trailer, David Harbour is definitely doing something with that accent. But he is a very entertaining actor. And yeah, Rachel Weisz, obviously love her so much.
It is an accent.
It is definitely an accent.
From the great land of Accentistan.
And I guess I'm also just curious about like what does a Black Widow movie look like? What do the set pieces look like? You know, this is a character who is associated with spycraft and espionage. Like, I think this might be a chance for them to do something a little bit different than what we've seen in other Marvel movies. So I'm very intrigued by it. I believe Jack Schaefer, who was the showrunner for WandaVision, is a writer on this. So. So I feel like that bodes well.
Yeah, she co-wrote the script. Kate Sherwin is the director, who's a director that I haven't seen any of her work, but I know a lot of people really like some of the earlier projects that she's done. And also, you know, we know they let it slip that Julie Louis-Dreyfus will be making an appearance, which is very exciting. The villain, the Taskmaster, is his identity is a secret still, which is kind of crazy because this movie was supposed to come out over a year ago. And it's still no one knows who that character is being played by. And so that's kind of interesting because who knows, maybe that might be a fun kind of reveal. So yeah, I'm all in, obviously. But I will say the most anticipated Marvel movie of the summer for me is the Loki television series, which also comes out in June.
Yeah. That's fair.
Sir not appearing in this preview.
I wanted to spotlight a couple of other things before we move off of July. One, sure. This Cinderella movie by Kay Cannon, who people might know as like the writer of the Pitch Perfect movies and the director of Blockers, which is a movie that I really enjoyed from a few years ago. I didn't know this was happening until we were prepping for this episode. I'm not really in the market for another Cinderella movie, but this does seem pretty awesome. Like, it seems like it's going to be a musical. It stars Camila Cabello, who is a pop star that I don't really know anything about except for the fact that she has a very public relationship with Shawn Mendes, which got a lot of annoying press coverage last summer. But it also stars Idina Menzel and Billy Porter and John Mulaney and Minnie Driver. And of course, the star of the Smash musical Mamma Mia, Pierce Brosnan. So excited that maybe he might get to sing again because he was so good at it the first time. But yeah, I didn't know this was happening and this seems wild and I'm kind of excited for it now.
Yeah, I had a similar reaction when I saw that this was coming out. And I actually, for a second, like, this is how much Disney has just, like, subsumed everything, where I was like, wait, doesn't Disney have the rights to Cinderella, you know, a centuries-old fairy tale? And then I had to, like, oh, right, like, it's a fairy tale. It's like, what am I doing? So that just shows you how much Disney has...
Someone has forgotten...
Would not-
Someone Has Forgotten Ever After, the Drew Barrymore starring Cinderella story.
Not that Disney would not like to try to patent the very concept of Cinderella, but...
No, I think
there's still some limits left in our world.
I definitely saw Ever After in theaters.
Me too. I don't know why. My mom. I think I went with my sister. She was excited for it, and it definitely was like I was looking for a Cinderella movie, and that it didn't feel enough like a Cinderella movie to me when I was like 8 or whatever when that movie came out. So I was like, what is this? This isn't what I was looking for. But you know. Another movie that's coming out is called Dog, and it's the directorial debut of Channing Tatum, apparently, co-directing with Reed Carolyn. And it's about like a military person who also has a dog, and they're going to a funeral. That sounds like a fake movie, you guys. Are we sure that that's not a joke?
I mean... A guy and his dog go to a funeral. It sounds like a version of What's-His-Face's Halftime Walk.
Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk? Oh, that movie's an underrated film, I will say.
It's a Belgian Malinois.
Yeah, now, I believe that's a large dog.
I mean, it's a potato. It has to be a large dog.
Also, like, Koryanka Kilcher is in this movie, who, Noah, you will know as Pocahontas from The New World. So there's fact as well.
Okay. That's not enough to make me want to see the movie, but it's definitely interesting. I actually have one film that I would like to highlight, just because I have no idea if I should have any expectations for it or not, but... Stillwater, written and directed by Thomas McCarthy. Mm. I was double checking his filmography. I'd forgotten he has an interesting background. He had an acting role in Good Night and Good Luck. He has a co-writing credit for Up. He wrote and directed The Cobbler, which is an odd Adam Sandler movie. mid-level Adam Sandler movie. He wrote and directed Spotlight, which, of course, won Best Picture, and he won the he himself won the award for Best Original Screenplay. And Spotlight was not on my top 10 list from that year, but it was a perfectly fine movie.
It is a great movie, and it deserved to win Best Picture. Just have to interject that.
No, I'm not saying it's not like it was not one of my personal favorites. I completely get like it is very much a classic Best Picture material for the Academy. And I totally like
that is you're being so like backhanded with your compliments right now.
I'm not okay. I really am not trying to be. I did like Spotlight. Anyway, he also co-wrote Christopher Robin, the Ewan McGregor like Robin from Winnie the Pooh when he's an adult, which I didn't see, but
that movie is about what if Christopher Robin had a midlife crisis, and it really is about that, and it's very odd. He just spends a lot of the time yelling at Winnie the Pooh, which is just such a choice.
So, like, taken together, you've got a couple of amazing films in there, and then you have a couple of writing and directing credits that are interesting, so... I don't know. He's definitely an interesting guy. And Stillwater could definitely end up be... I feel like Stillwater could either end up being really great or at least kind of interesting in an oddball sort of way. Like Christopher Robin having a midlife crisis.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his. He's not someone who doesn't always... Like, he's someone who can miss, right? But he has a lot of potential to hit big every time. And so I'm definitely looking forward to this, but I don't also think that it's necessarily going to be great. Like it's like, it has the potential to be really good, but it might not.
I would not be surprised if reviews start to come in and people are like, oh, this is like a sleeper for, you know, one of the top films of the year. So, like that would not surprise me. It also wouldn't surprise me if people come back and are like, it was all right.
It also wouldn't surprise me if, like, people just don't even know that it happened, right? Like, if you're just awesome. Like, oh, wait, did that movie ever come out? You know? Like, I could also see that happen.
So that it was interesting to see that on the list just to remind me of what exactly Thomas McCarthy has in his background. He's an interesting guy.
Yeah, and he's also an actor. For those of us who've seen The Wire, you'll probably remember his very infamous role in that series. He has an interesting filmography. Like, he started out doing very small, sort of character-centered dramas. I still need to catch up with a few of them. I remember enjoying Win-Win. But yeah, Spotlight really felt like something major from him. I'm surprised no one brought up Timmy Failure, Mistakes Were Made, which was a movie, which sounds wild. Did not make the time for it, but that was definitely something he did, and actually mostly got positive reviews. So,
I think any movie that can admit that mistakes were made going in is the movie that I respect.
Yeah, no, but this will be interesting. I'm curious about. It's nice to see Abigail Breslin in something again. I honestly can't think of a ton of things she's been in apart from maybe Zombieland Double Tap, which was maybe not the best use of her talents. So hopefully this is
but a movie that you did see. So
yes, a movie I did see.
There's other stuff happening in July. Like Jungle Cruise is finally coming out. That's not a movie that I particularly care about. But it is something that's happening. Old is a movie mm-hmm. that's coming out that people are really excited about. M. Night Shyamalan's Old, that the trailer debuted at the Super Bowl this year and people went crazy. I thought the trailer made it look ridiculous, but I was in the minority, so I guess we'll see what happens there.
I can say when my parents and I, who were watching the Super Bowl at the time, saw it, we're just like, no, we just were like, no, that's not an actual movie.
It's Noah. The premise is like, what if you go on a beach and then you all just keep aging like rapidly and for some reason can't leave the beach, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Shyamalan tapping into his absurdist roots.
Sure.
I yeah. Miss me with that.
Vicky Crepes.
Yep.
She's in the movie.
Now I want crepes, guys. I'm hungry. I haven't had dinner yet.
Well, we do have one more month to discuss. And this is definitely, I think, kind of like some of the other ones we've been talking about. I think definitely runs the gamut with stuff that we're really looking forward to. And other stuff we're just like, okay. That doesn't seem like anything I'm remotely interested in.
No, mostly I'm just shrugging when I'm looking at this list. I mean... Yep. The headline is Suicide Squad from James Gunn, which, holy crap, I can't wait to see that. But everything else,
Yeah, the Suicide Squad looks like a lot of fun. It looks like that cast is way too big, so I'm expecting most of them to die pretty quickly. But I'll be excited to see what they do in the meantime.
What's his face? Slipknot? Yeah. Slipknot style?
Yeah.
Hopefully more dignity than that.
I mean, the Birds of Prey was such a breath of fresh air in the DC cinematic universe, such as it is. So I mean, the trailer makes it look like it's going to keep that vibe to it. Oh. And I hope that pans out.
I don't think that vibe is exactly the same as this vibe. This vibe seems a lot more like hard R gross violence than that movie had, but definitely with like a sort of like silly absurdism to it. I feel this feels like it's going to be like James Gunn unfiltered in a lot of ways, where the Guardians movie is like is James Gunn but like dialing it back a little bit because he's in the Disney house, this is going to be like James Gunn unfiltered, sort of like that movie that he made with Rainn Wilson and Ellen and Elliot Page all those years ago, which was super. And that is a gross movie. That I enjoyed watching. I think it's going to be that sort of vibe. So
I'd be there for it. It'd be something different, so.
Yeah. Here's hoping Joel Kinnaman dies pretty early. No offense to Joel Kinnaman, but
he's been saying it. He's like, no, guys, like I'm funnier in this one. I'm like, okay, yeah, sure.
Sure. You say so, buddy. Okay, so yeah, that's the big, that's obviously the big tentpole release of the month, other than Paw Patrol the movie, which I don't know if you guys are excited about, but Ian Armitage is in it, so, you know, young Sheldon himself, yep.
Yeah. The movie that I really want to spotlight here, which again has been pushed back so many times, but is now officially coming out, is Candyman from Naya DaCosta, who of course will be directing Captain Marvel 2. She before this directed Little Woods, a film that I enjoyed from a few years ago, starring Tessa Thompson. And this is I think. Definitely Jordan Peele is a driving force behind this. He's both a producer and a co-writer on this. But I'm really intrigued to see what DaCosta brings to this. I think she is, with Little Woods, I think she proves she's very good at showing people in very difficult circumstances and the lengths that they will go to make a better life for themselves and their loved ones. And this film just like, I think in addition to giving me an excuse to finally catch up with the original Candyman, seems to be really tapping into something very current, and the fact that it's doing it in this sort of horror milieu, I think, is just really fascinating. It's got a really awesome cast with Yahya Abdul-Mateen playing the main character, I believe Tiona Paris playing his girlfriend, and also Tony Todd will be returning as the titular Candyman. So it just, there's so many just so many awesome elements here. I just feel like this, I would, of the films that we've discussed, honestly, this is the one that I feel like might, for me, and maybe I'll eat my words on this, or maybe I'm jinxing it, but I feel like is like the most guaranteed hit. So that's what I hope for anyway. So yeah, that's the one for me I'm most excited for in this month.
Yeah, friend of the show, Matt Taylor, has been hyped for this movie for like 16 months now, and I'm very excited for him that it's finally coming out. He's talked me into being excited for it as well. I don't, as you know, as everyone knows, not a horror guy, but this, you know, I've been convinced that this is a horror film worth watching. So I'm also now excited to see it. And also, you know, another film role by Coleman Domingo for this year.
Yes. So
very excited for that as well. But yeah, I think that it's definitely one to keep an eye out for on July 27th. And also going to be in theaters. Like, it's not an HBO Max movie, it's not a Paramount Plus movie, it's not a Netflix movie, it's going to be in theaters on the 27th. So that'll be exciting as well.
27th of August, right?
Yeah, I keep saying July, but by July I obviously mean August. Yeah, there's some sequels this month that are like curious, like Don't Breathe 2, the Fede Alvarez film from a couple of years ago. I didn't see the first Don't Breathe. It sounded gross, but some people did like it. Justin, I know you saw it, right? Are you looking forward to a sequel?
So I was a fan of the first movie. There are some gross elements in it. That just seems to be a theme with Alvarez, honestly, if either of you have seen his Evil Dead remake, though I would say that one was far worse. Anyway. I was a fan of the first one. This is actually, Alvarez, I believe, is only a writer on this one. It's directed by his longtime co-writer, Rodo Sayaguez. And here's the thing about this sequel. From what I'm finding on the premise, this is actually going to center on the blind man played by Stephen Lang in the first movie, and looks to be more from his perspective, which, given what happens in the first Don't Breathe, I find a very baffling choice. Because he does some things in that movie that you're like, wait, I don't like this guy. Like, what the hell? Like, why do we care? Like, what is going on? I am kind of baffled by that as the premise for this movie. You know, who knows? Maybe the film is going to reckon with that. I feel like that's not very likely to happen. I got to say, like, if you make a movie in the vein, like with that sort of that same amount of suspense and tension and just command of tone, that would be something I'm intrigued by. The fact that we're centering on that character in particular makes me much less interested, and I'm still very confused by it.
Yeah, it kind of feels like how when they made a sequel to Sicario and made it center around the Benicio del Toro character, and you're just like, wait, no, like, that's, I feel like you missed the point of your first movie.
Yeah, I like Sicario. I did not bother with Sicario 2.
Day of the Soldado. Yeah, no thanks. But yeah, there's some other stuff here. Like Free Guy is finally coming out. That movie's been moved around the schedule for the last year a lot. That's like Ryan Reynolds is in a video game and then he becomes self-aware.
Right.
I don't want to watch that movie, but some people seem to be excited about it. I'd be open to finding out that it's worth watching, but not super pumped for that. Are you guys?
The only thing I could think of is just Jodie Comer, but that's about it.
Yeah, but you know that they're not going to do Jodie Comer justice, right? Like, no. I mean, possibly better than in Rise of Skywalker, but, you know.
Well, it's a very low bar.
Yeah.
Remember how she was, like, Rey's mom in Rise of Skywalker? So insane.
Gosh.
Why hire her for, like, that flashback? But, okay, yeah, there's other stuff too, like Bios, the Miguel Sapochnik movie, seems kind of cool. It could be bad, but it sounds like it could be interesting. It's Tom Hanks plays like the last man on Earth, and I believe Caleb Landry Jones plays his like robot son, right?
Yeah.
So that sounds wild. Caleb Landry Jones, not who I would pick for a robot, so I'm very interested to see where that goes. And Miguel Sapochnik is like most known by like modern filmgoers as like the director of all of the big giant action episodes of Game of Thrones. So, and this doesn't seem like a big action movie, so I'm excited to see where that goes. Samara Wiley is also in that movie, who is an actress that I think is very talented. Reminiscence, which is going to be on HBO Max and in theaters, that's Lisa Joy, co-creator of Westworld. This cast is insane. It's Hugh Jackman, Rebecca Ferguson, Tandy Newton, Daniel Wu, and Cliff Curtis. The premise sounds less cool, I will be admit. It's basically like in a near future Miami that's underwater, like people it's like people get to like relive all of their favorite memories, but then like Hugh Jackman I guess falls in love with a woman, and then the woman may be a criminal, and now we have to get to the bottom of it. And it's like, oh, that sounds like not an interesting way to develop that world that you've just created. But okay, I'll be willing to see where it goes with a cast that stacked, you know, so we'll see. Also, there's a movie that Netflix is releasing starring John David Washington, Alicia Vikander, Boyd Holbrook, and Vicky Cripps called Beckett. And I got really excited because I thought it was going to be about that Beckett, but it's not at all. So
wait, the premise, so which Beckett were you thinking?
I like Samuel Beckett. Like I thought it was going to be like Waiting for Godot, but like starring that cast. And I was like, that's awesome. But instead it's a vacationing couple fall trap, which is an odd choice, to a violent conspiracy with tragic consequences, which is like, no, thank you. So,
I would just say when I saw the title of that, even though it's actually, it's two T's and the thing I was thinking of is one, is I thought it was like, is this a remake of the 1964 historical film of the same name about Thomas Beckett?
Oh.
So that was my initial thought. But yeah, I kind of love the fact that you thought this was like a Samuel Beckett biopic. That would have been.
I mean, well, we've had like a Tolkien biopic. We've had a, you know, we've been a lot of these like these classic figures from our English classes have been brought to life by mostly Nicholas Hoult. So, you know, I was excited to see what that could have been. But alas, it is not.
I did want to really briefly just one more thing about Beckett. The director on this is Ferdinando Cito Filomarino, who has been mostly a second unit director on Luca Guadagnino's films.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Huh.
Including Call Me By Your Name, Suspiria, I believe some of his earlier stuff as well. But yeah.
That might look nice.
Yeah, that's at the very least, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it stars John David Washington and Alicia Vikander, so it was going to look nice regardless, I guess. Well, but
it goes without saying. But
Is there anything else on this list that you guys are... I mean, we didn't talk about The Kissing Booth 3, of course, the triumphant conclusion of that epic trilogy. But other than that, anything else for the month of August?
I mean, the only other thing I'll bring up is we're getting Respect, the Aretha Franklin biopic starring Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah, that could be August, cool.
Okay,
Which is interesting.
Wait, who's directing that?
It's not someone I've heard of. The name is Liesl Tommy.
So, okay.
South African director.
Okay. So I was going to say, if it's being directed by a white dude, then hard to
miss.
It
is not.
But, okay.
It's being directed by a woman of color.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is also, you know, this is coming at the same time that Cynthia Erivo has been portraying the character on television in the Genius miniseries for National Geographic. So, interesting.
When do we get a movie with Cynthia Erivo again?
Well, you could watch the TV show that Cynthia Erivo is starring in.
Well, but that's a TV show, Alex. We know the rules. You have to get my wife to start watching it first.
I've heard it's, like, okay. I've heard it's not necessarily... It's a very sort of, like, broad take on the Aretha Franklin story, so... But I've heard that Cynthia Erivo is obviously very good at it.
I think I'm just going to rewatch Bad Times at the El Royale again.
You should rewatch Widows if you want to see a good Cynthia Erivo movie.
Or that, actually. It would behoove me to revisit that movie, because I only saw it once.
Oh, such a good movie. My favorite movie of that year. Anything else on this list? Because there was one other thing that I wanted to talk about before we close out, if there's nothing else on August.
I don't think so. No, I'm good for this month, yeah.
Okay, so there's Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which comes out September 3rd, which is technically still the summer, even though we like to think of that as the fall. But technically, fall doesn't start until the end of September.
Very pedantic, Alex.
And this movie was supposed to come out in July and only didn't because they had to push it back again for COVID. Originally, it was supposed to come out in February of this year. And I'm really looking forward to this as well, the Daniel Cretton film starring Simu Liu and Awkwafina and Tony Leung and a lot of other cool people. Michelle Yeoh, of course. Yeah. Love her so much. So I feel like we have to talk about it on this episode, even though it's like technically outside of the months that we usually talk about.
Yeah, which is why I didn't really even look into it. I'm hoping this could be, you know, everything that Iron Fist was not. And
well, I mean, like, Iron Fist was so very little. So it's not really saying much. But no, I mean, did either of you watch the trailer for this that was recently released?
I've not seen it yet, no.
Okay, it looks, like, incredibly, like, colorful and dynamic. The action looks really interesting. There looks like there's, like, some wuxia sequences, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And just, like, Simu Liu looks like an amazing, just, like, star. And I'm very excited to see him. It has a really ambitious, at least in the trailer, a really ambitious visual sensibility that I was not necessarily expecting. Because, you know, Daniel Cretton is known for sort of these quiet interior relationship dramas more than anything else. And I was very curious what he would do with a big, giant action movie. And he's really serving some awesome kind of looks in this trailer, at least. And I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, no, I would, you know, I'd love to see what he can do with this, because I feel like it's been a little while since he's had anything really as good as Short Term 12. I thought Just Mercy was just fine. But yeah, no, I was excited when I heard he was going to be directing this. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it looks awesome. So I just wanted to quickly say that, because that's like one of my most anticipated movies of the summer. And just because it got pushed out of July doesn't mean that I can't still call it that.
Yeah. All right. Well, unless we have any other sort of general thoughts about the summer.
No, I mean, I think, like we said, like there's some stuff to watch that, like, we've talked a lot about a lot of films. So there's definitely things to be excited about, things that seem interesting. It's just that usually I feel like those lists are longer and we're not there yet, but that's okay.
Like, I think this is going to be another year where our hopes are mostly going to be non-movie related, with the hope then that next summer can maybe be more movie oriented.
Yeah.
Than the past 2 years have been able to be. So
there'll be more new movies this year than there were last year. And that at least is something.
Yes. No, movies are not dead. Anyone, I hate people who jump on the bandwagon of, oh, XYZ happened, which means cinema is dying. That's, you know.
But it will be interesting that, like, you know, we have so many, a lot of the big movies that we talked about were Netflix releases. A lot of them are HBO Max releases. And a lot of the Paramount stuff is going to be coming out, with a very small window before it ends up on Paramount Plus. So that's a factor as well. So, you know, it'll all be interesting.
We're definitely in the middle of a paradigm shift. What the end result will look like, none of us know yet.
Yes. And I hope that we can come back in the fall and have a robust fall preview episode for you guys.
Yes.
All the Oscar bait.
Yeah. So for now, let's talk about where we can find everybody. Let's start with you, Noah.
Well, in addition to my work here, you can catch the work that Justin and I did on Pod on the Rooftops, a podcast devoted to the discography of the band Genesis. You can follow me on Twitter at Noah France. And you can also catch all of my written stuff at my blog at francenoir.blogspot.com.
As for me, you can find me at thecinemaverick.com. That's my website. I also am on Letterboxd at thecinemaverick. And I will just mention probably the best place if you are interested in checking out our Pod on the Rooftops podcast, that is going to be on thepopbreak.com. And next, we'll finish with you, Alex.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Media Thinkings. You can follow the show at Cinema Joes. You can subscribe to us on all of the podcasting platforms that you like best. You can also follow my work over on thepopbreak.com as the podcast's editor. I've been really working with our great podcasters to develop some amazing shows that you should definitely check out. We have two feeds running, Popbreak TV and also The Breakcast. Popbreak TV is obviously focused on television. We talk about reality shows. We talk about the TV industry, TV news. We also talk about anniversaries, and we talk about new seasons of stuff that has recently come out. So all that stuff is over there on Pop Break TV. Over on The Breakcast, it's more of a general culture podcast feed. So we have a show about wrestling. We have a show about anime and manga. We have a show about music hosted by our good friend Luke, who is Noah's brother. That first episode on Selena came out this past month. It's really, really awesome episode. And yeah, also some stuff about movies over there as well. So definitely check all of that out if you're interested in those podcasts and more. In addition to subscribing to those podcast feeds, you could just head on over to thepopbreak.com/category/podcast to see all the latest podcasts that we have to offer.
Nice. Thank you for that, Alex. But for now, we do want to thank all of our listeners and all of our subscribers to this show. We hope that you have a very enjoyable movie summer, and we look forward to talking to you again. So for the Cinema Joes, this is Justin Mancini signing off.